All right, so I'm going to be speaking with Angel Rios tonight. And a few days ago on Twitter, or excuse me, on Facebook, I've had some people give me some criticism, open and welcome to criticism, as always, and wanted to know, if there are differing views, I'm always open to hearing them, and I want to hear them. And I think it's beneficial that people are welcoming to differing viewpoints and they're open to hearing about things that are outside of what they would consider their comfort zone. And that's important to me specifically because if you aren't able to engage in dialogue or conversation about certain concepts or ideologies or have a conversation with people whose views differ from yours, then you just preach into an echo chamber. And Angel had commented on a few posts and was respectful in doing so, but and I see Angel just hopped in here. Angel, I sent you over the invite, see if you're able to just pull that up. Make sure you're on your cell phone because it doesn't work on a Mac, but or a PC either. But I wanted to hear Angel out and hear what he had to say on some of his views, and likewise, I sent you the invite. Are you able to pull it open? Otherwise, just try to X out and join back in, and when you join in, it might populate. It says invite sent. Yeah, Angel, just X out of like the whole app. Just make sure you're closed out of out of Facebook and jump back on, and then it might automatically pop up so I can add you. But he had posted a few things, and I just wanted to talk to him and in a respectful manner, because I see so often so many people won't even reach across the aisle and they won't even engage in a conversation. And my beliefs are out there, I wear them on my sleeve. I am not afraid to express my views, but I'm also not going to shun people or that brought you here. All right, Angel, just X out of Facebook entirely, like on your phone, just close the app. If you have like an iPhone, like swipe up on the home and then like X out, and then when you open it back up and you rejoin, it'll have something that says bring them on camera. But I want to have an open dialogue. My issue is not to bolster my own beliefs. And Chaz said click the green thing in the corner, Angel. My objective is not to just bolster my current beliefs. It's to make my beliefs more robust and also encourage, hi Nikki, to encourage people to have those conversations in a respectful atmosphere, because it's almost impossible to find people that have differing beliefs and that want to discuss matters on both sides of the aisle. And I think that that's really important, because I've noticed that Colorado, no, why would I go out to Colorado? I've noticed that oftentimes people do have the same end result and the same objective in terms of what they believe. They just don't have the time or the respect for each other to get there. Yeah, they're still there. The issue really hinges on the fact that there is no dialogue. The reason that there's this divide is because people buy into whatever it is that they want to buy into, and then they just dig their roots into their conservative beliefs. It's all right, man. It says there should be something in the bottom right corner that pops up. I see everyone else that's joining. There we go. I got you. Says adding now. So let's see. There we go. Hey, what's going on, man?
Hello.
Yeah, and sorry about that. It's not too complicated once you figure it out, but I appreciate you hopping on. And
No problem.
I saw that you had some pretty different viewpoints, and I just wanted to bring you on because, unlike most people on social media, I actually will show my face. And I actually will stand by what I believe in. And likewise, obviously you will as well. So I appreciate that first and foremost. But I wanted to sort of get your take on certain topics, because I forget what the initial post was,
But there was an initial post that you had disagreed with, and I'm trying to scroll through here to see if I can find it. But whatever it was, I wanted to know what you, where you were coming from with that, and what your positions were. So, I mean, I'm assuming you're a registered Democrat and fairly liberal, and I just want to, sort of see what do you see as the differences between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party right now?
Well, to start off, thank you for having me on, first and foremost. I do apologize for the way I look at present. I just came back from a run, so
Hey, I don't mind. That's why my hair always looks good, because I'm a lazy ass.
and it's just, getting I'm actually presently in California, so trying to get outside and any sort of exercise right now amidst the pandemic is extremely important, for me at least. But I think what originally tipped the notification, so to speak, was the fact that I think I commented on a post wherein the post suggested rather blatantly that individuals that come from differing political ideologies probably or couldn't date. And
Oh, that's what it
you're
was. Yeah. It was a post where it said that I've seen so many times where people said they couldn't date others with differing political beliefs, and I said, I stand by that, because my view of what is a left leaning and very strong liberal ideology, I feel as though it's either because those who have those beliefs are either too lazy to look up what the facts are, intentionally ignore them, don't care enough, or if they are fully aware and still support it, then our values and morals differ. And
Right, and go ahead.
go ahead. And I mean, and my point was, you oppose that, but I want to know what it is. And I'm speaking in general terms, right? Just like we can talk about Trump in general terms, because there's no absolute to either party. But I stand by that statement and genuinely believe that if someone is very strong in support of Biden or the DNC, it's because they either don't know the facts, or too lazy to look up the facts, intentionally ignore the facts, or if they know the facts and fully understand them, then their moral compass is just entirely disaligned with mine.
Well, and there's something to be said about that. I think that any sort of, political support that takes the form of almost a religious fervor probably isn't, the most, intelligent form of expressing one's political beliefs. At the same time, though, and this is largely operating from a belief that, there are enough individuals within a particular dating pool that even know what the DNC is.
That's, I mean, that's fair.
when you come down to individuals that are actually knowledgeable about the inner workings of the party, I think that you'll be hard pressed to find any one particular individual that's, the chief cheerleader for the Democratic Party. There's a lot of
Well, no
intra-party
one
in
else can be a chief cheerleader. That's already Adam Schiff.
Well, and with him, I he is from Southern California. He comes from down here. His district is in this region. And I'm sure that he has I'm sure that he has both what amount to legitimate concerns regarding the administration and then on the political side, what amount to higher aspirations than House Intel Chairman,
Well, yeah, I
so
mean, we all know that Schiff is trying to climb the ladder. I mean, that's very blatantly obvious. But my big thing is, would you concede that he f effectively filibustered Congress with nothing but lies during the impeachment hearings?
I would say that. Well, to answer your question, no. But at the same time, that's a nuanced no. I would say that the way that he delivered his administration of the committee during the impeachment hearings was largely a circus. It did not rise to the level of decorum inherent that I believe people think are inherent that is inherent in the in the United States Congress. I think that as chairman, there were certain aspects of his leadership that purposely encouraged, pandemonium almost. There were a lot of attempts on the behalf of the Democrats to have these real gotcha moments. We're already coming into this situation, with a House minority that has, a bruised ego from the elections when, Nancy Pelosi took the gavel. And so just, it was an entire...
Well, are you referring to, when you said House minority, you're referring to the RNC, the GOP having the weak ego once it flipped blue in 2018, is that what you're referring to?
Well, not a weak ego, but naturally, some scarring,
I think that's natural in politics. Any party that loses control of one of the two chambers is going to naturally be upset. I mean, that's just
right.
inherent
and
in that.
And it's not even, I think, knowing Nancy Pelosi, I think that there is something very interesting about the way that she runs the House, which is, and especially during this period of time, which is it's almost, mafia-esque. In the sense that she,
yeah, it's mafia-esque. I mean, it's ruled by power. I mean,
well, and
I want to get at the core of some more of the. I want to get at the core of some more like hard-hitting, like straight to the point, right on the button concepts. Because I mean, you're a nice guy, and I'm not here to fight with you. I mean, we can have differing beliefs. We can end it and not agree with things. But
right,
I want to go back to the thing I said about Schiff. Do you not agree that he filibustered Congress with nothing but lies during the impeachment hearing? And I guess I can double down on the statement by asking also, do you not agree that the impeachment process should never have occurred in the first place?
Again, no. I would say that, again, I will adjust that in saying that obviously the impeachment process, whether constitutionally intended or not, is largely a political tool.
So you would admit that impeachment was nothing but a political tool. There was no legitimate legal basis to bring the articles against Trump, both articles, neither of which were founded in any fact, as we now know, when Schiff held onto the transcripts for 6 months.
Well, I think that it doesn't rise to the level of impeachment. And I think that that's something that you would hear from any reasonable politico, and it was something you heard from
and I would agree with you, maybe a reasonable politico, but why do we have people in Congress like Nadler, Schiff, Schumer, and Pelosi, AOC, and the rest of the squad still claiming that Trump colluded with Russia, Trump lied, he should have been impeached? Reasonable political, I agree with, but we have elected officials in Congress that are still doubling down on impeachment.
I think that, the veneer of Mr. Smith goes to Washington is largely gone. That this is
Mr.
a group
Cosby
of
goes to jail.
Yeah.
Mr. Rogers' neighborhood.
Right. This is a group of individuals that on, the side of individuals like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, are political ideologues. So for them, there is no room. The ideology is so fervent that, it removes all other room to hold any other position. On the more traditional side, for individuals like Jerry Nadler and Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi, there's much more political strategy, both intra-party and external, that plays into it. So, these individuals aren't necessarily, suffering from quote unquote Trump derangement syndrome, although I have no doubt that they don't like the man.
Believe me,
more...
I have no doubt they don't like the man either, but I think they're fully blown deranged. I agree with you that there are certain things that has to happen in terms of political jousting and positioning and posturing that are purposely designed and intended to be focused on and control of one of the two chambers. But when does it cross the line between you're prioritizing your reelection efforts over the integrity of not only the Constitution, the judicial system, Congress, and law, but the American people as well? Because everyone wants to claim that Trump is responsible for 100,000 deaths during the coronavirus pandemic, yet he couldn't do anything because they were so focused on impeachment. You know, I want to, you know, remind you, the coronavirus hit during the middle of the opening statements and arguments during impeachment. And you know damn well, if Trump would have said, we're closing the borders, they would have spun that to be an anti-immigrant stance that was saying, oh, Trump's anti-immigrant, he's racist, and in the middle of an impeachment trial. Now, Trump didn't, you know, like, would you agree that that is exactly how it would have been spun, whether through the, you know, Democratic congressmen and women or the media? Would you agree that that's how it was going to be spun?
Most likely, yes.
So it's a double-edged sword, right? He can't act in the middle of an impeachment trial. He waits until January 31st, acts as soon as he can, and then they say he waited too long. Yet Pelosi was in California, probably, I'm guessing you're in L.A. or somewhere around L.A. I mean, she was in Chinatown, in the same city you're sitting in right now, 9 days later, saying that it was safe to come out, come to Chinatown and come join us. And then she turns around and blames Trump for not acting soon enough. How can you say something 9 days later, incentivizing people to mix and mingle out in public under the same conditions, not to mention California was hit harder and it was hit first because of just geographic reasons where you fly in from China. You don't fly from China to DC, you fly from China to California. So Why was it okay for her to say that, but not Trump? And even if we're assuming that Trump didn't act quick enough, okay, let's just say I concede that point, which I don't. But if Trump didn't act quick enough and that had negative effects, then shouldn't Pelosi be held to the same standard when she goes out 9 days later and says the same thing?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that, you know, on from the speaker's perspective, you know, that there, you know, there she has been at this a lot longer than the president has. You know, she's been in Congress almost 30 years, if not
more. And she's accomplished nothing.
And so, you know, it's the situation where I think that she, her mistakes.
Oh, she was in San Francisco, Chinatown. I'm sorry. Thanks, Alan.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that, you know, for her, her mistakes are more easily swept under the rug because she has, you know, a lot of experience in recovering from them. And then
and
also
the media in her pocket.
That there is that. And then, you know, also the fact that there's a massive party apparatus behind her. You know, she's the most powerful woman in the Democratic Party. So, you know,
I mean,
the Democratic
are you
Party.
Are you discounting Hillary? Because I think that she has a hell of a lot of power.
I think that Hillary has largely retired to the woods of Chappaqua.
I do not. I think that she is as president in Washington as ever.
You know,
her influence is never going to go away until that bitch dies.
You know, when it comes to the secretary, I think that there's a certain portion of her, and again, this is coming from an individual that worked on her 2016 election campaign. You know, there is a
congratulations.
There is a certain aspect of her that I think has in fact retired from public life. Now, will she ever completely remove herself from the field? No. I don't think that she's capable. I don't think she's capable of doing that. But you know, getting back to the point, I do believe that, you know, people should, especially when it comes to individuals in, you know, constitutionally established offices, like the Speaker and like the President of the United States, should be held to the same standard, whether that be by the media or their constituencies.
I agree. And, you know, what do you think is going to be, like, when you vote in November, are you going to be voting for Trump or are you going to be voting for Biden?
Well, I have no problem in telling you that I, for the first time since I started voting, am going to have an immensely difficult time voting for an individual for president of the United States. When it comes
first off,
to
I just want to make everyone that's watching this aware of what he just said, because that is so important. And this is a compliment to you. I mean that in the absolute most sincere way. The fact that you actually will come out and talk to me, the fact that we can have a absolutely respectful dialogue, absent my incendiary jeers. I'm not doing that at you. I'm doing that at Hillary because I hate the bitch. And I have nothing but absolute respect for you for opening this dialogue, because I want other people to see that people with differing views can talk. I would have no problem going to grab a beer with you if you were in DC or something. But when you're on a computer and you're behind a screen, one, you can't read tone, and two, it's a hell of a lot easier to get pissed off and just start going at people and attacking them. But when you actually have to sit down face to face with someone else and look them in the eye and realize that they're a human, all of a sudden the tide is lower, people have a level of respect, and you can get open dialogue. And once that happens, whether, you know, and I'm not saying that I have any responsibility, you don't know who you're going to vote for, but you're a California lifelong Democrat, and you just said that it's going to be difficult for you to decide who you're going to be voting for. And is that largely in part, would you attribute it to the fact that you don't like the fact that Biden is the nominee, or is it more so to the fact that you're starting to see something more holistically and to change your views on things?
So thank you. And, you know, when it comes to my difficulty in voting, you know, on the Democratic edge of things, I have an issue with the sincerity of the vice president's, the former
Peter
vice president's
Peter said he sees a forehead on the bottom. Are you able to fix your lighting? Your head's sort of in half with lighting. Do you have like a different light you can put on you or something?
Oh, I wish I did. There is no central light in this living room, unfortunately.
Can you sit up a little higher or no? Because your head's like there's like a line that's like right across the middle of your face. I know what he's talking about. That's
is that better?
That's good enough. People can hear definitely
that. You know, from that perspective, you know, again, I have a hard time investing in the sincerity of the former vice president's platforms. I do not believe that, quite frankly, anything within his policy prescriptions are things that he can get past not only Congress, but actually he himself believes in.
Do you think he's capable of believing in anything anymore? Because he's got about the attention story from Finding Nemo. The man has just left his basement for the first time in 2 months, can't get Skype or Live to work. And when they finally do get the man to speak without it glitching, he's racist.
So, you know, I think from a particular perspective, Joe Biden is a politico through and through, and will encompass whatever he believes is politically expedient in the moment.
Well, my thing is, don't you think that he's essentially a political pawn? Do you think that Joe Biden in his heart truly wants to be running for president of the United States in 2020?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Do you think that Joe Biden is aware that he's running for president of the United States in 2020?
I don't. I think that in his mind, it's 2000 and we're just coming off the Bush years.
You think Joe Biden thinks he wants to run, but Joe Biden doesn't necessarily know whether he's running or not.
Yes, I very much think so, or at least doesn't know that he's running in the present era.
Sometimes when I'm drunk, I like to think I'm flying in an airplane when I get the spins when I lay down in bed. You know, but you know, it could be a different story side of the thing. But you know, that's the issue. It's like the man is so delusional that he would get lost looking for the microwave when he was told to nuke the Chinese.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that, you know, I was watching something actually from.
And yeah, can you see if there's happening. Can you turn your light on or something? Because everyone's saying they can't see your face. Not that I care,
they
but
can't
I'm just tired
see
of
my
reading
face.
This comment. Because the lighting. Oh, that's better. That's better.
That's you're, better?
Look at you. Like, literally, during this debate, you're coming to the light.
Oh, my gosh. Hold on.
You're
well,
good. I mean, just,
you know,
whatever. I mean, you. Well, oh, your hand's in the way. That's where it is. The light's on your other side.
Oh, okay. There. Is that better? Am I ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille?
You're good enough now. But, well, no. And Peter Boykin said, please, person on the bottom, don't vote Dem just because you know, that's the type of comment and shit that we don't need. I don't care about his sexual orientation. I'm not going to ask him about his sexual orientation. I don't care if he's gay or shit. It has nothing to do with someone's ability to be informed whether to vote for Republican or Democratic. Being gay isn't something that is particularly of my concern. Ask about that. I don't even want him to comment on it. And I don't think that it's relevant whatsoever. I mean, that's an example of exactly what I'm talking about. That type of shit is exactly what's not needed in politics. Unless you're trying to grandstand or get some sort of clout for being a dickhead, there's no point in talking about that stuff because what does it matter? So focus on the issues. I'm talking to him respectfully about dialogue as to why it's, you know, why he believes what he believes, seeing how I can transition. So who gives sexual orientation? Because I don't believe any one of us have ever even alluded to that other than Biden. And by mentioning the closest thing we got is him hair sniffing. So leave the dickhead comments out of it. All right. So, you know, and I confront people head on when they want to say stupid shit. No, a shiny forehead. Okay, if you want to say something else that's just critical, I'm just going to block you from this because actually, fuck it. I'm just going to block you now because you're a dickhead. hang on. No, I don't care if you're Republican or not. If you're an asshole, you're gone. There's no point in people being in here that are just going to be rude. All right. There we go. Sorry about that aside.
No, you're totally fine.
But, you know, like, about Biden that you do like, or are there things about Trump that you do like?
You know, I think when it comes to him, that there is amount of inspiration that he inspires in his constituents and with his constituency. You know, these, you know, on the Democratic side of things, there's such a demonization of the Trump supporter and conservatives. And, you know, there are individuals, you know, there are conservatives that are, you know, in the mansions and the communities, and there are the individuals in the Rust Belt who are just trying to create an economic system that's favorable to their way of life. And, you know, I have had the opportunity to meet some of these individuals both in my work within the IFW, you know, on
a governmental. Your internet's lagging real hard.
Oh,
your internet's lagging real hard. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Can you hear me better?
You're like, yeah, your face is frozen. The internet was lagging, so I couldn't hear what you're saying.
Oh, no.
There you go. You're moving again.
Okay. No, and so what I was saying was, you know, I think that, you know, the president's ability to really connect with his constituents, whether that be by bypassing the message clearinghouse, which is the media, or, you know, just essentially another
I'm having a hard time hearing you. are you on Wi-Fi?
Yes, actually. Then again, you know, this is...
did sound better.
Okay. essentially what I was saying was is that, you know, whether it's the president's ability to connect with his constituents or his ability to discern what their policy priorities are on a grassroots basis, you know, it's something that I admire about this particular administration. For the vice president.
What don't like about administration?
What
is your biggest quarrel with Trump?
Well, honestly, I would believe it would be a majority of the policy prescriptions. And then more importantly, how this White House operates. I believe that, you know, regardless of anyone's particular views, it is impossible for the United States to not be interconnected geopolitically. Given an erratic White House, which again has had a multiplicity of chiefs of staff, as did the Obama White House. But, you know, this particular administration has gotten rid of their COSs in a much more grandiose way. And having individuals assigned to particular cabinet departments that are relatively antithetical to the departments that they've been, you know, nominated and confirmed to run. You know,
well, so your biggest quarrel with Trump is more so of the manner in which he runs the White House, as opposed the manner in which he runs the White House and some of the policies regarding his geopolitical positions.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to the rhetoric, whatever.
You agree that Trump is not a racist?
No, yeah, I don't believe he's a racist, not at all.
Do you agree that he has America's best interest at heart and his best interest in mind?
You know, I think yes. you know, I obviously would hope so. I cannot, not knowing him particularly, or you know, that's presently still in the administration, I can't speak to his mindset. But, you know, I think that any individual that's willing to make the sacrifices inherent to becoming president of the United States and staying there has at least some principled call to service. You know, being president of the United States is not easy.
It ranged between $400,000 and $450,000, $100,000 of which he donated to those working on the coronavirus within the government. The man worked 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, and then the media throws a fit when he goes and plays golf on Memorial Day weekend, when Obama himself golfed 7 out of 8 Memorial Day weekends while he was in office. And the fact that the media can just ride him, and a lot of this isn't directed at the Democratic Party or the DNC or the liberal-leaning constituent citizens and viewers, it's the media. Do you agree that the media, if the media took their own damn advice and they stayed home and self-quarantined and deemed themselves not essential, the pandemic would be over? Do you agree with that, or what is your thought?
That when it comes to the national media like CNN, MSNBC, you know, it's yes, I think that largely, and it's the introduction of news directors and you know, news directors and network presidents that are more concerned with generating, you know, viewership through controversiality, increased ad buys. You know, these organizations have turned the news into a cash cow, and that's largely degraded the integrity of how journalism delivers facts.
And I agree with you 100% on that, because what it is that look at the Ahmaud Arbery, look at the George Floyd, these types of cases. Why are these covered in the media? Because we know that police kill people all the time, and if you're a police officer and you exert excessive force and you kill someone, your ass belongs fired and thrown in jail just like the rest of every other scum human being that kills someone. And the reason I don't mention race is because being a shitty cop and killing someone isn't about race. While I understand that race can be a motivating factor, the media won't let that die. And there's always going to be inherent racism because it's intrinsic amongst people and there are just some shitty people in this country. Only cover stories that create controversy, because controversy creates interest. Interest creates revenue. And that's the only reason they cover these types of stories. And I want to go back up here real quick, just to acknowledge Alan. He asked a question. What does Biden possibly have to offer over Trump? And I want to get into that question. I just want to first, you know, sort of flush that out. Do you agree that the biggest issue in America is disinformation and is perpetuated by the mainstream media?
I think from a political perspective, that's the case.
I mean, there's a lot of other issues in America that, you know, like 6ix9ine's out of jail. But, you know, in terms of actual political issues, I would say the mainstream media is America's biggest enemy. And then the DNC.
I think that there are obviously, you know, much like painting all police as racists, you know, it's a negating effect to try and paint all the present day.
Yeah, and I mean, I call Fox News out too. I call Fox News out for Neil Cavuto. And I'm not saying that because you're not aligned to Trump. because I have no issue when people want to give Trump flack for shit. When he made that dumbass comment about the bleach, he did not say drink bleach. Never said right. that. But he phrased the question very poorly. Very poorly. Well,
and, you know,
and I get
think
what he was
that...
trying to say, though. He said it in a colloquial right. manner. And the issue is that right. the President of the United States, especially after he's done what he's done, he should have knew ahead of time to perhaps be more articulate in the phrasing. But everyone has said something like that, right? Everyone has said something that comes off the way it's different than what it means. He's essentially saying, like, hey, look, we have bleach that, you know, kills it on the surface within, like, 60 minutes. And then he just, you know, pulls, like, a granddad move and is like, hey, can we get something like that that we can use, like, internally? He wasn't saying bleach internally. He's saying, like, can we come up with something medically that could cleanse someone internally in about a minute? Like, I mean, that's the fair and reasonable interpretation of what he was saying. But people just blow right. it out of the water because it creates a hysteria.
Right. You know, I think that... You know, I think that there's something to be said about that. You know, obviously, again, it falls back to how can we generate controversiality in order to increase our ad revenue? And that, you know, the president is not a political communicator. You know, one of the things that his constituents love about him the most is that he doesn't speak from a script. And, you know, that's largely
true. Oh, look at that.
True.
Look at that. The guy that I blocked is back throwing a bitch fit. On a new account. I'm going to block you too. Goodbye, Robert Boykin. Wow, that's a pair. You know when you really trigger people is when they start typing in paragraphs because they know they only get one shot. That's the thing I love about it, you know. When you trigger liberals and sorry, let me rephrase that. You're liberal, you're not an asshole. When you trigger the triggerees, then they start typing in paragraphs because they know they only get one shot to piss you off. And if you lead with Mike Yoder as a punk, it's not really like the best way to go because I can just type T. My favorite one that you go back to is by saying TLDR, that's not an abbreviation. That really triggers them because they don't know what it means and they Google it and it means too long, didn't read, and you just block their ass. But anyways, go back to what you were saying that was relevant.
So, you know, you're looking at the situation where – you know, the president is not a political communicator, and there is no individual within the White House press corps or within the control rooms of any major news organization that didn't know or doesn't know when the president says something that's a tad bit non-traditional what he originally means.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that it then turns into, you know, Don Lemon on CNN saying, you know, the president has recklessly instructed his supporters to drink bleach in order to kill the coronavirus. You know, if anyone
would
is stupid enough
to... Would you agree that's spun out of proportion, right?
Yes. And, you know, honestly, if anyone is dumb enough just to drink bleach, to believe that it's going to kill...
If you're dumb enough to drink bleach, look up the word Darwinism.
Exactly what I was going to say. I was just like, you probably weren't long for the world anyway. So it's a situation where it's just like, it's there are people within the news, you know, the Walter Cronkites of the world are largely gone. You know, there's no one that's committed to the principal deliverance of facts without a partisan viewpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, the large conversations surrounding there's Republican media and there's Democratic media. And, you know, if you want to get anything that's actually true, you kind of have to watch both and be able to pick from.
Well, I'll go ahead and finish what you're saying. You have to actually go ahead and watch both. I was going to say, if you want to know what's actually happening, don't watch either. Because both networks on both sides of the aisle have a political agenda. When people talk about here is a factual documentary. Bullshit, because you wouldn't be doing a documentary if you didn't have some sort of tilt one way or the other, because there's no point in doing it, you know.
Right.
Look up the facts. And the other thing is that the U.S. code is available online, every congressional bill is online, and they're actually all in English. So if you care enough, and not you specifically but in general, if you care enough and want to know about what's going on, read the original source.
Right.
For example, and I use this example, I thought of it yesterday. What is the scientific way of saying water?
Right. H2O. You
know, H2O. Do you know what a hydrogen molecule looks like? An oxygen molecule looks like? Because I sure as hell don't. But I would die on the damn sword that water is H2O. And why? Right. Because I've been told it time and time and time and time and time again. And I would fight to the death that that's what H2O is, because guess what I can do? I can cite a ton of sources. But what if water wasn't H2O? Because I've never seen it with my own eyes. And what if every source that I've ever been exposed to, not every source out there, but every source I've ever been exposed to, was false? And all of a sudden, it just racks your brain, and you realize that, wow. And a lot of people get aggressive because they don't want to confront the fact that they've been reading things or they've been misinformed for a long time. And that goes both Republican and Democratic, because both people align with what they're comfortable with. But that's the point of what I'm trying to say, is that, you know, there are issues that are open to a dialogue, and these type of things are beneficial because it shows, like, you and I can have a normal, civilized conversation and talk. You have legitimate reasons that you don't like Trump, and it sounds like you just don't like the way that he portrays the office of the executive. I don't find issue with it personally, but that's a valid opinion, and you're entitled to that belief. I don't see issue with that specifically, but, you know, I want to go back to what Alan asked earlier. What is it that you see that Biden could offer over what Trump could continue to offer for the next 4 years?
You know, I think that it largely comes down to the domestic purview of the federal government. You know,
well, what is the purview based off of what the federal government does or how the media portrays it?
How do you mean?
Because it's about the you said what it comes down to is that what Biden can do for the country is based off of the purview of the federal government. Mm-hmm. When you say purview, I mean, it's not like the actual purview in terms of textual terms changes by having a different president. Like the extent of power the executive has remains constant. And
right.
So it's not about the purview. Are you saying, are you speaking in terms of like perception of the federal government, the way that the United States citizens respond or react or view or embody the federal government? Or are you speaking about the way that the purview, what the scope of what the federal government can actually do changes in terms of like what is truly, you know, a democratic, like a liberal ideology, which is more power to the feds, less to the states as opposed to conservatives, which is, you know, obviously small, big government, low, big, small government.
Right. I think both is true. I think that whether or not the facts, you know, whether or not it would actually be an effectual change, really, where any difference was actually achieved, is, you know, obviously something that would have to be seen.
Can you articulate one thing that you stand on that you truly and genuinely believe Joe Biden would be able to do that would further benefit America that Trump has not nor could be able to do while he was in office from 2020 to 2024?
So to answer your question, I honestly do not think that in this period of time, the transition to a Democratic presidency would be wise. And
why do you think that?
Well, one, we're in a period of immense flux, you know, with the pandemic. You know, I do not think it's smart to transition presidencies in the middle of a pandemic. In coming up, you know, with the massive institutional switches that would come through presidential appointments, especially in the middle of a term, you know, no one can get anything done in 4 years. You know, that
I'm excited Joe Biden puts his lapel pin on the right side of his jacket every day. We have to cherish the small victories here. But in all reality, you know, I agree with what you're saying. And do you see how few things have you and I disagreed on during this conversation?
very little.
And see, guess why? Because we can actually talk to each other. When it comes to the core, the only thing that we disagreed on is that you don't like the way the executive is portrayed, and I don't have an issue with it. I'm not saying that I agree with it, but I don't take issue with it. And those are two reasonable minds can differ. No one's going to be upset about that. You know, I'm not necessarily sure I want it to go out in the history books when my kid ended up reading that President Trump called Kim Jong-un a little rocket man. It's funny as shit. But also it's like, maybe not.
Right.
But you know, nonetheless, those aren't disqualifying factors in the magnitude of the presidency. And you and I haven't disagreed on that much. You also agree that it probably wouldn't be wise to transition during the pandemic, that there's nothing that Biden really could do that would further the interests of the country that Trump can't or has not done. And then I want to just go back to like what we said earlier, where, you know, it was a very, you know, bold statement for you to make. And I appreciate you saying that, but you said that it was going to be difficult for you to decide who you were going to vote for between Biden and Trump. So taken into the context of the continued conversation we've had and you acknowledging that it wouldn't be wise to transition and that there's nothing Biden can offer that Trump can't, what makes that a difficult decision to vote for Biden versus Trump? Is it more so of just hanging on to what is comfort and just the resistance to change? Is it more so grounded in that, or is there something emotional or factual, or what is it?
No, I definitely would not think that it's anything that has to do with, you know, the fact that I'm comfortable aligning myself with other, with Democratic politicians. At the end of the day, I honestly, wholeheartedly believe that an individual should vote for whomever they believe would represent them as a constituent and their views the best. You know, I think, and that's the same thing for me. If I believed that, you know, and I take this largely as like a almost a third person kind of view, because I have a unique role wherein I can influence policy and change and affect things in a way that other people can't. You know, I have, you know, the organization I work for has a massive federal advocacy infrastructure that I can control. So, you know, I'm not your everyday Joe citizen at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, most people have a hard time, you know, getting a hold of their elected representatives. I have a good majority of them on speed dial. So, you know, I take, you know, my voting largely from a third person perspective, where it's my belief that, you know, whoever can represent who I know to be the constituency the best is who I would vote for, regardless if they're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, whatever. It's whoever can represent the district and their priorities the best.
And I don't take any issue with what you said. When you define in the last sentence, you said whoever can represent the constituency the best, and then you also said the district the best. So what is the specific scale that you know, on those radius maps where you can draw the circle out from your home to however big, you know, when I do my radius, it's based on every American citizen. And that's my personal views. When you say, you said constituency, then you also said district. So it seems as though you're alluding to choosing the presidential candidate that you feel would be best suited for your specific geographic region. Do you look at it from the entire nation's perspective and what's best for the country, or do you look at it from the perspective of what's best for where you live?
I think that, well, to answer your question, regardless of what office it is, I delineate it jurisdictionally. So, you know, if it's a city council,
well, the POTUS is the whole country.
Right. Well, and I think that, you know, we have to take an alternative view to what the President of the United States is, can do, and will be moving into a much different landscape politically and governmentally than we were in the Eisenhower era. You know, the country is bigger. The issues that we face are larger.
Yeah, we have like half of Mexico here.
And so, you know, you have this situation where it's the age-old question, do national problems really have national solutions? Wherein, you know, a particular issue can affect multiple states, but is it really wise to dictate from D.C. what the particular solution will be?
No, the answer is no. And that's why Republicans want small federal government and big state government. That is the definitional component of that.
And
that
I think that, you know,
are.
I think that there is, you know, with that, I think that there are a lot of points that I can concede. I think that there is a lot that the federal government can do, and that it needs to do that can only be done from a centralized source. But on other things, it, you know, it's important to remember that, you know, what is a solution, you know, what's something that, you know, a solution that works to a particular issue in Los Angeles may not be, you know, as effectual if applied, you know, in Salt Lake City or in Tallahassee or in Miami.
In Nebraska.
Right.
In the rural areas of central Pennsylvania, where I'm from.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, I think that as we move forward into a much different governmental landscape, we either have to refocus on the fact that Congress is meant to, at a grassroots level, represent their constituents' policy priorities and voice that. I have such an issue with people, which, you know, largely balls in the entire political system, but individuals who run on pillared policy platforms, where it's just like, well, when I'm in Congress, I'm going to do this, that, and the other.
Get elected first before you start talking a big game. AOC probably can make a mean old fashioned, but she sure as hell can't draft the bill.
Well, and there's
like,
that.
You said. Look what Christopher Christensen said. He said gay and voted for Trump. Gay and conservative and voted for Trump. No regrets. That's another thing. I'll condemn every conservative that wants to go out and spout rhetoric about homophobia and things like that. Mm. Because what does it matter? Mm-hmm. I'm uncomfortable if I see a guy and a girl making out on the street just as much as I'm uncomfortable seeing two dudes making out on the side of the street. And it's none of my damn business. I only care about things that affect me.
Right.
And your marital or sexual preferences have zero bearing on my life. Do what you want. Yes. It doesn't comport with my religious beliefs, and I'm not going to advocate in favor of it, but I'm not going to oppose it. If I have a gay friend that gets married, I'll go to his wedding out of respect for a friendship. Just because I'm conservative doesn't mean I'm going to shun that. And right. On the other side of the aisle is you look at these certain policy issues, and a lot of this is, you know, I want to get into the pragmatism and the reality component of certain things. Universal healthcare, Medicaid for all, Medicare for all. Do you think that there's any Republican that doesn't like the idea of every American having free quality health care? No. The issue is, can you do it? Elizabeth Warren's plan was $15 trillion off. And think about the economic impact it had with a $3 trillion stimulus. Imagine now five times greater. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily about the policies. It's about the means to an end and what can you realistically achieve. And if you look at what you can achieve and incorporate that factor into it, then what your actual objective is and what you're striving for drops, because your goal is to actually get there, not preach about it and say that this is a good thing in theory. You know, I mean, that's my personal view. Do you agree with that? Or what would you have to say about that?
Yes, I would definitely agree. Back to the question of, as we move forward into such a larger country with such, you know, I don't know what the government, you know, whether or not the federal government infrastructure will be able to maintain its, you know, structural integrity, so to speak, its operational integrity, if we ever reach a population the size of China. You know, I don't think, given the fact that
reach the size of China, because, I mean,
I think that, you know, given, you know, especially here in California, you know, by 2025, we're already the largest state in the country. There's 39.5 million people who live here. By 2025, it's projected to be 50 million.
Say this, though. California is perhaps not led by the worst governor in the United States. It is a damn close race between Andrew Cuomo and Gavin Newsom. So I want to let you know that you might actually come in second place in this one. Congratulations on losing the number one spot out of 50, dropping the 49 out of 50 based on Democratic leadership. So I do want to just extend my sincere congratulations to the leftist leadership out there that is headed by Mr. Gavin Newsom.
Well, and, you know, when it comes to the governor, any governor, regardless of the political affiliation, I could not imagine what it's like to be the chief executive of state right now.
No, I mean, how can you run like Wyoming?
What? Right, exactly. And, you know, so it's just, you know, it must be an impossible situation. And regardless of, you know, how you decide to administrate it, it's going to be difficult regardless. But when, it, you know, outside of the coronavirus pandemic, Gavin Newsom's positions, again, it's largely the same issue I have with Joe Biden, where it's this political ladder climbing mixed in with voter pandering that then translates to a lackluster administration where nothing of any actual effect or long-term, advantageousness occurred whatsoever. You know, we espouse all, you know, and that's such a huge problem in the Democratic Party, and something that I think has been communicated from the grassroots of the party's base, you know, with such fervent support behind individuals like Bernie Sanders and AOC, wherein you have establishment Democrats like Gavin Newsom, despite some people's characterization that he's, you know, a bleeding heart liberal.
I think he's got a boner for Justin Trudeau, to be honest.
Well, I'm sure he'd like to be Justin Trudeau.
yeah, because he's the prime minister, not the governor.
Right, exactly. And, you know, it's a situation where Gavin Newsom is only interested in the next political office that he can obtain. You know, this man
just like
started
Adam
off.
Yes. Just like Pelosi. Well, she's already at the house.
Well,
she's going to get, she's not.
Yeah, I don't know where
she'll keep it.
Right, exactly. Like, I don't, you know, I for Nancy Pelosi, I think it's largely how she can keep power. You know, she's gone as far as she's going to. I
think 25,000 of ice cream in her freezer, either or.
You know, I don't think that she's going to run for president or anything in the future. I think she's largely past that point. Not to mention, the political civil war that would create. For him, it's, you know, this man, I have followed his career for years. And, you know, this is an individual that started off purely as an individual whose parents were well-connected. You know, his father was the administrator of the Getty Trust.
Doctor gets into politics. Well-connected.
Yes. Parents. Exactly.
Remember when there was the whole thing about how Obama did it on his own and then Trump had his dad that actually gave him the money and people bitched about that, but why don't they say the same thing about Newsom? Isn't it effectively the same story? Not getting into whether it's right or wrong, but isn't it the same story?
Yeah, it is pretty
that
much the same story.
The hero from the left could be starting out because they're connected, but yet Donald Trump, who came from a family who provided for him by virtue of, you know, white privilege, as they call it, or in other words, as I say, circumstances. Some shit's just easier for people than it is for others. And it's not, life's not fair. You know, life wasn't fair for me. I was adopted at 2 days old by parents that were 40 in their mid 40s. Neither one of them went to college, less than 40K a year on annual income. I had to go to my guidance counselor and say, hey, how do I go to college? They kept taking the SAT. Right. I said, And I didn't know you studied for it. I just went up and showed up on a Saturday morning after a Friday night football game, took the test. I came back and they gave me my score and I took it in and said, hey, am I going to college? They said, definitely not. That, what the hell is that? And I was like, I don't know. So I was like, okay, well, how do I do better? They told me to study. So I saved up money and I bought a study book and I studied for the SAT and I paid and took it again. And then I paid for my own college and I paid for my own law school and I paid for my own bar prep and I paid for my own apartment. And I've done everything on my own without the help of anyone. And that's mainly why I'm Republican. And getting into, like, you know, going back to like the concept of, and I'm more than happy to give to people in need. I don't like the fact that my government takes my money and I don't have any say of where it goes after I busted my ass for years to get there. And that's, right. It's not about Republicans not wanting to help. It's about Republicans not wanting to lose control of their money and have it wasted on stupid shit. I just saw them painting the gold leaf in Union Station a couple days ago. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Why the hell are you painting gold leaf on shit?
You know, I think that that would be a fantastic idea if we could somehow, you know, if not largely impractical, but, you know, how if we could somehow, you know, democratize the tax structure and how, you know, it's dispersed, you know, removing the power of the federal, you know, federal budget priorities from Congress, you know, who probably couldn't find a constituent's, you know, domestic policy priorities if they had a flashlight, and giving it back to the, you know, to the individual. How would you like your tax money spent? What are your, you know, what are your priorities?
Why can't, you know, it be like one of those things where you win money and then you can pick one of like six charities where it goes to?
Right, right, right. And so, you know, I would very much agree.
Do you think that there's a lot of waste that is spent from Democratic government? Do you think that there's first off, do you agree that the illegal immigration stance is not about humanitarianism and it is about voting?
I think it's both. And, you know, I know for some people, you know, my capitulation to both sides of the argument becomes largely annoying. But
no, I actually agree with you. I think it's part of both. I think there are genuinely people that are trying to flee for a better life. Mm-hmm. And I think that that equals probably about 3 to 5% of them.
You know, I think that I, on a personal level, don't want to imagine a Democratic Party wherein their conference, there has ever been a conversation with, you know, how can we take a more favorable stance towards amnesty and illegal immigration to solidify a voting base for us?
There's no other crime in the history of the United States that amnesty has ever been enacted for. Amnesty is effectively, retroactively forgiving criminal conduct at the time that it occurred because situations changed at a later date. And why should they be given amnesty if they got here illegally?
I think what we need to do is
change how difficult it is to get here legally, put it on an incentive program, and have it like structured. Let's say you have a blue card. Okay, 90-day vetting period with no red flags. While you're on a blue card, you have a curfew. You're obligated to apply to 4 to 5 jobs per week. You're obligated to accept employment once an offer has been extended to you. And then once you obtain employment, you have to show up and be a responsible worker, paying your taxes at a higher rate for 6 months. You do that, no arrests, no crimes, no violations. Then you get a little bit of more leniency. The whole time you're studying to be integrated into the United States. After you get to a certain level, then you can apply for a driver's license, which is a privilege, not a right. And then you slowly get integrated into society, but you're here. And once you're here, you're in the country, you're in the workforce, you're assimilating, you're integrating, you're learning the English language, you're paying taxes, you're becoming accustomed to society. And then when you finally go to your naturalization ceremony, guess what you get that day? You get to say that you're an American, you get to go to the ballot box. Why is that such a complex concept for people? Why not create an incentive? Because human behavior is all based off of incentive. I'm not gonna wait to do something if there's no reward in the end. So why not just run through the damn fence, go to California where they're going to have a sanctuary city? Why not structure it and that it's a – make them want to stay here? Don't have the culture of it saying, I can get kicked out and I can just come right back.
Right.
You know, incentivize the people. Don't have a policy that allows you to just do this. If you make it on like an aggregate scale, you're going to bust your ass to get to that next level where you get that level of freedom. And then just increase it and incentivize it. Why not do that?
Well, I would very much largely agree that there needs to be some sort of hybrid reform to the immigration system that includes something akin to what you described and other policy prescriptions as well. The interesting balance that would have to be struck there is largely surrounding what, you know, how can we fulfill our moral and human rights obligations to the global community? Because, you know, it's not just individuals coming in from the southern border. There are, the conversation surrounding Middle Eastern refugees was something that dominated the stage long before the president decided to put
every
the border
country
wall
has
on
its
the
humanitarian
agenda.
And moral obligations to the global population, right?
Right.
Well, there's
right.
205
this is
other
true.
Countries.
This is very true.
So why do they have to come here? Not every country is war-torn. It's a small percentage of them. It's less than 10%, most of which are centered in the Middle East. So for them to get here, they actually have to go through other countries to get to America. So now you're cherry-picking. Don't bite off the hand that feeds you. You can't, you know,
again, largely you're having, well, because again, you know, you're facing a situation where depending on the region in which they're coming from, they either have to go through Europe or they have to go through Southern and Central America.
What's wrong with Europe?
And when, well, the political situation has largely changed.
It's
due
safe.
To,
you're telling me France isn't safe? Okay, absent coronavirus, fair. I wouldn't want to go to Italy right now either. But absent coronavirus, you can't tell me that France, Switzerland, Germany, Ukraine, Denmark, Sweden, Spain, that
well,
those countries
Ukraine,
aren't safe to live
in. I mean, Ukraine.
I mean,
Ukraine,
depends on where you are in Ukraine. I didn't say Crimea.
Well, yeah, but again, you know, when you're coming to a country to resettle, even if it's, you know, for a temporary period of time, and keep in mind, I'm speaking from a global development perspective,
wherein don't move to resettle, they move for temporary relief.
No, but when it comes to Middle Eastern refugees, the temporary relief is going to be multi-generational. There's nothing for them to go back to.
So
Syria isn't a country.
They're not asylum seekers, and that's where the issue is. If you're an asylum seeker, you have a different standard than a refugee that becomes a migrant.
Well, again, when...
So why are they
abusing
asylum-seeking provisions to get here expeditiously when they have no intent of returning in the first place?
Because the situation is one where that surrounding refugees is largely something that's in the hands of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights and the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. The refugee resettlement process is something that's undertaken by the United Nations. And it is a very slow, very arduous, faulty system wherein individuals sometimes have to wait months or years in order to be successfully resettled. And otherwise are faced with a situation where they're brought slightly in where, you know, the conflict, you know, the conflict map is moving consistently. You know, the place where you've been brought to in an emergency resettlement camp can become a hotbed, you know, the next week. And then you have to move again, and you have to move again.
No,
and
these are very important issues that a lot of people on the right don't know about, because just like when I come at people from the left saying, you're ignorant, guess what? Wake up call. There are people on the right that are ignorant, and they think that all immigration is are people that are getting on the George Soros-funded coach bus for $15 an hour to come up to the border and go into good old Gavin Newsom territory. And guess what? That's the large majority of them. But there are people that genuinely are trying to get a better life and be safe and save themselves. And I saw in here earlier, I don't know if you saw him, his name was Mansoor Alizar. He hopped in here. He's from Saudi Arabia. I met him when I was an undergrad. He didn't speak a word of English, and I sure as shit don't speak Arabic. So you can imagine those conversations. But here we are 9 years later, and we're still friends. And it's not an anti-immigration culture. It's not an anti-racism culture that Trump fosters. It's an anti-illegal immigration, and don't break the damn law. I can't say that I should be allowed to steal because I don't agree with the stealing laws or the theft laws or burglary.
Again, one must take in, again, I completely understand that. I would not necessarily, you know, it's difficult for anyone to say that we are in a situation that largely rises above the present legal structure that we have in place. But again, speaking from an international development perspective, this is what I do for a living. The humanitarian situation in the Middle East and in South and Central America is so far outside of the realm of understanding for the general American that it almost becomes impossible for individuals to accurately and adequately engage in a fruitful conversation surrounding this matter.
I agree with that. I don't know if you know this or not. Are you familiar with Laurent Gbagbo, the Cote d'Ivoirean president?
No.
He committed crimes against humanity. He was tried in the ICC in The Hague outside of Amsterdam. He was charged with genocide and war crimes. I was in the Netherlands, and it was there translated a portion of his trial during that. Now, he is a mass murderer. It was genocide. It was purely genocide. It was just outright humanitarian issues. And I agree with you that a lot of people don't know these issues. But that goes back to, you know, and I'm going to let you off here shortly, but that goes back to what I was starting with in the beginning. The federal government is supposed to regulate from the borders outward. So anything that's outside of the United States is something that is within the purview of the United States, its ambassadors and its diplomats, done whether through the UN or other accords and treaties. Anything that's done within the United States, within the borders, don't you agree that it should be more state-to-state power based on what you said earlier, which was that people in LA shouldn't be dictating what farmers do in Nebraska, and farmers in Nebraska shouldn't be telling people what to do with water issues in Miami?
Yes, I think that it's very important to bring in, you know, the mayors of major cities, simply because they are centers of population. The governors
will be coming in handcuffs because their shit's unconstitutional. Like that Chicago mayor, she looks like Flick from A Bug's Life. You see her?
She, I am.
She was towing cars from churches so they don't go to church.
Lori Lightfoot. And this is before I work back to the main issue, but Lori Lightfoot is a Chicago politician. And, yeah, you know,
one of the most dangerous cities in America.
Well, you also have to realize that Chicago politics have, this aura about them for a reason. You know, there's something about Chicago that breeds a specific type of politician that's much more abrasive
I would agree that Trump's pretty damn abrasive, and he sure as hell would never be elected in Chicago.
No, yeah, I would very much say as much as well.
The reason that they're abrasive is because they're braids. They're brazen and they have balls because they know that they're protected. It's a good old boys network. It's no different than The Wire, the TV show in Baltimore. When you're connected and you can just walk around and try to no one can touch me. And the only reason people can't touch you is because all the citizens and constituents are uninformed in Chicago. But that's, I agree with you that the mayors need to come in. But what about like things that are happening in New York? Look at de Blasio. Miss Beetlejuice. I call her Flick from Bug's Life. It's a little bit easier. But like, look at de Blasio saying that people that are gathered, but de Blasio ordered the police to arrest people attending a funeral. That person is never going to be coming back. That person is in a fucking casket, and you're going to put them in jail to see a loved one go away because of the fear mongering and the pandemic and the fact that people are so pissed off that it is all about the election. Imagine taking this out of the bubble and look at it with the big picture. The fact that a governmental entity is telling you that you can go to jail for trying to say goodbye to your loved one for the last time to score your fucking vote is disgusting.
Yes, I would agree. However,
it could be airborne AIDS and it's not justified because that's your choice.
Well, this largely plays into a public health debate that is very difficult to administrate. When does one's civil liberties stop and another's begin? I think that there's a strong case to be made in surrounding the argument of your stops when, you exercising your civil liberties might compromise my health by no choice of my own.
What is the definition of when it infringes? Is it when it maybe, it might, it likely will?
I think that the argument isn't surrounding, and this is from a New York perspective because they have a very robust public health department. I don't know about other municipalities. But when it comes to New York, this isn't something that's coming from Dr. Oz. The advice isn't coming from a hack doctor wherein we're trying to throw medical prescriptions at the wall. Where we're trying to take medical prescriptions and throw them at the wall and see what sticks. It's
sort of like not Obamacare. Versus Sebelius, throw that shit at the wall. Hey, it's not really a penalty, even though it's a penalty in the actual language of the bill. It's just a tax. We'll just throw the whole plate of spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks.
Again, it's the situation where executing big things is very difficult, and there it's almost impossible to foresee all of the issues one might run into. With the administration of restrictions and social distancing in New York due to the coronavirus, it's an exigent circumstance wherein this is.
But do you agree that there's no exigent circumstance that applies to the Constitution?
Yes, but the Constitution also didn't foresee massive pandemics.
But the Constitution has survived for 220 years plus, and it has still been a living, breathing document. So why now should we all of a sudden carve out an exception to that when there are legal and procedural means by which the Constitution can be preserved, upheld, and protected without getting in front of or compromising it? Because what happens once you poke a hole in the Constitution one time, it is a slippery slope. And as an attorney, yes, believe me, I make a living off of starting those damn downhills. So I know what happens and the magnitude and the effect. It's you give someone an inch and you take a mile. That's why you can't poke holes in things like that. But it is infringing on a religious right, your religion. It is definitionally the imposition of church, or excuse me, the imposition of state on church, which is definitely, definitively, and clearly articulated and separated in the Constitution under the First Amendment.
Well, here's the, well, you know, and the Constitution brilliantly provides a prescription for recourse for that.
So why not exercise it?
Hold on. I believe that, you know, if it truly is a constitutional issue that, you know, outside of churches or whatever, just, you know, even largely just the social distancing guidelines and restrictions put in place by governors and municipal mayors, if these truly are an infringement on civil liberties as afforded by the Constitution, any part thereof, then there, you know, I'm sure that there will be a cudgel of individuals that will be bringing this through the court system, and it will inevitably find its way to the Supreme Court. And, you know,
it's already been struck down in Wisconsin. It's already been struck down in Michigan. There have been two courts that have already
by federal courts. By federal courts. So if this is an issue that winds
its, those were, you know, both federal courts. Were you saying that those were in federal district courts? Those were federal courts.
Right, and okay. So it's the, yeah, and so this is a situation where, you know, if we're going to paint it across the country, which is largely, you know, this is a national issue, a global one really, but as it pertains to the United States, this is a national issue. So if that's what it's going to feed into, we have to go to the Supreme Court for that interpretation.
And if it's an intrastate issue, the Supreme Court is the only court that has original jurisdiction over the issue. So if it's something right. to do with intrastate travel or interstate travel, for example, if it's dealing with two states, if you look at the you know, city of Philadelphia versus New Jersey, it was a case of landfills. That goes straight to SCOTUS. When two courts sue each other, the Supreme Court is the court of original jurisdiction where the case is filed, as opposed to an appellate court. So it could be expedited if two states have the balls to actually confront each other. But have you noticed how, based on Democratic strongholds, no two states that are actually integral in the Electoral College process have opposing viewpoints where they can actually balance each other out? Sure, you have Republican states that are bordering other liberal states. But do you notice how there's like a slow grade? It's a slow divide going all the way up. Think about the East Coast. Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, you know, Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania. Then you go up to New Hampshire. It's a gradual, slow grade. There are not two big, heavy-hitting states that have significant voters that are in conflict with each other. So they don't sue each other because they don't give a shit. One is bigger than the other. It's David and Goliath. Structured geopolitically.
Right. Well, you know, again, I think that there's something to be said about the fact that, you know, when it comes to the Supreme Court, yes, they may be the court of original jurisdiction with this particular issue, but at the end of the day, you know, it is up to them on whether or not they'll issue a particular writ to hear the case. You know, and that's a whole other.
You file a writ and they would issue you know, certiorari on it. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, and I think that you agree with a lot of what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is, I just want people to see that you and I have differing views, and it could have got real hot real quick on Facebook, where we could have just been firing off being asshole keyboard warriors with each other, because it's easy to do behind a screen. But when you're in DC, you know, I'd love to have a beer with you. We'll go out and grab a beer. I don't have to agree with everything that you say. I respect you even more so because of the fact that you're able to say things that aren't entirely aligned with your public image as, you know, working for the International Federation for Women. You know, I say things that offend a lot of people, but that's because they don't listen long enough to hear what I have to say. And if you can get these types of dialogues going, and you can show it's okay to reach across the aisle, and you can show people that both of us agree that the media perpetuates this negativity, the media is what's creating the divide, people on both sides are uninformed, and, you know, going back to like the hammer home question, I mean, you really even said it. You're like, I'm going to have trouble deciding who I'm voting for president in 2020. And, you know, but you also conceded that there wasn't something that you could articulate that Joe Biden brought to the table that Trump could not do for the country. And, you know, when you think about that, you also said that the coronavirus, you agree that it's probably not the best time to transition political leadership, especially with the divide in the midst of a pandemic. So, I mean, so what would it be that would compel you in the voters booth to vote for Biden over Trump with all those factors considered? And correct me if I didn't say something that you said yourself, or I regurgitated it incorrectly, but what would it be that still compels you to do that? Because what it really comes down to for me is that people don't want to let go of what they've held on to for so damn long. And the resistance to change, it's just the fact that I don't have a reason, but damn it, I'm going to hold on to it, and I don't want to let go. And it's true with a lot of things, not just politics. Think about people that are hoarders. People that, like, there's certain things that you have, you know, damn well you're never going to use it again, and you can't give it to yourself. You can't bring yourself to throw it out, right?
Right.
It's human nature. And but when you look at it, why not? You know, why not?
And so, you know, I think that when it comes to Joe Biden, I find him massively unappealing as a candidate. I was not one of the individuals who supported the party push to essentially make him the presumptive nominee. And there are stories I could tell you about the inner workings of the Democratic Party, especially from the CADP's position as the nation's largest Democratic state party chapter.
Hey, we'll have another episode. That's a good idea, because I can tell you stories about the inner workings of the Democratic Party. They're going to blow your mind, too. So we can do an episode together when we're not debating. And, you know, we can do that another night. But, you know.
Story time. But, you know, so it's the situation where to answer your question, to what would bring me to vote for the vice president, in this present situation, you know, if I was asked to make a decision today, I wouldn't vote for Joseph Biden. I most likely would abstain from voting for the presidency, which is something that I have never done.
Is that because you realize that a green ballot, voting for a non party candidate, is throwing a vote away? It's effective.
Oh my god, yes.
Stein in 2016, it's like not even voting. Like, why did you even waste the gas? You're fucking you're you know, it's worse, right? You know,
exactly.
You're like doing 10 times more damage. But you know, going with that, why would you not vote for Trump then in 2016? Or to 2020. I know you didn't vote for him then, I'm sure. But so what is it that you right now would not vote for Biden? Mm-hmm. And you said that you would abstain from voting, but what is it that prevents you from voting for Trump?
It's the policy prescriptions. I do not believe it's both the policy prescriptions and, as we touched on earlier, his administration of the United States from a foreign policy perspective, and also from an internal domestic communications perspective. I do not believe that it's the appropriate tone to set. Internationally, I believe that his foreign policy has been erratic and extremely counterintuitive to United States interests abroad. the situation as it, you know, and there's something to be said about whether or not the United States should be as entangled as it is in geopolitical affairs, yada, yada. But, you know, we have to deal with the situation as we're given it. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we lack ambassadors in such key areas in hardship posts, that, or have individuals in place, for instance, I'm working with the World Bank and the UNDP on the ground in country in South Sudan, and there is an open question as to whether or not our ambassador there, Ambassador Hushkin, is really there.
Well, I mean, think about the ambassadors we had under the Obama administration with Vinland, Yovanovitch.
Again, you know, when it comes to Marie Yovanovitch, that is a career for
old hag.
That is a career Foreign Service officer. And, you know, that yes, I'm sure she was, you know, very battle, you know, a battle axe, essentially. Because, you know, when, and I'm sure you know this, cushy posts do not go to career Foreign Service officers. And that's for a reason. You know, you don't need someone with 40 years of Foreign Service experience, you know, in an ambassadorial post that largely, you know, is wake up, see if France has invaded Germany and go back to bed.
Sounds like a good job for Biden if he could find Germany or France on a map. He might be able to do that.
So it's the situation where, you know, you need them in places like Kazakhstan, like, you know, special representatives to Pakistan, like in Uganda and Tanzania, Somalia, you know, well, up into a certain point, Venezuela, before everything decided to collapse in on itself over there. And so, you know, for her, I have a hard time smearing her situation when she served under multiple presidencies of both, you know, of both parties, mm-hmm. And had served faithfully until she was recalled due to this freaking clusterfuck of an issue. And so, you know, again,
your whole thing is hinging on the reason that you don't like Trump. Boiled down to its essence, this is something that you know, word to the wise in terms of when I've been in employment. There's a joke. I wrote you something long because I didn't have the ability or the time to make it short. Right. And yours really just boils down to the fact that you don't agree with Trump's foreign policy, and therefore that's why you don't want to vote for him.
Yes. The foreign policy and the domestic policy prescriptions. It's not an issue where, you know, I don't like the man's. I honestly don't have a problem with him as a human being. So it's not
like that's the thing. Most people have an issue with Trump as a human, not as a leader.
Right. And so it's just like, you know, again, the rhetoric, yeah, I'm sure that I would clutch my pearls if I heard something like that in a nice restaurant. But it's largely separate from what one has to focus on when it comes to the chief executive of the federal government, which is the policy. And
you
how
think
they
that Joe Biden would be able to not have, but effectuate more effective foreign policy than Trump? Because those are the only two people we're down to.
I think that would largely depend on who Joe Biden would appoint to the position of Secretary of State.
So your issue falls with Pompeo?
No, because the president of the this is a president who largely circumvents the State Department. Pompeo is largely a mouthpiece for the president of the United States. He's not a principal advisor on matters of foreign policy, as previous secretaries of state have been.
Well, I mean, look what Trump did in terms of the North Korea, deproliferation. I mean, Trump is the first president to ever go there and actually make means to an ends in terms of trying to denuclearize these zones. Him leaving the Paris Climate Accord, okay, well, Greta Thunberg is also an expert, so, you know, call that a wash, whatever it may be. He passed the UMCA, the best treaty, destroyed NAFTA, just got absolutely rid of that piece of shit bill. So, I mean, there are, like, you know, I agree with what you're saying, and you really seem to hone in specifically on war-torn third-world countries, impoverished areas, and that's because of what you do. And, again, that highlights the fact that people's beliefs are based on their experiences, right? It's based on where you came from. It's based on your experiences. But that doesn't make a man holistically bad. It means that there's something that you don't agree with because you're A, informed about that, and B, you come out on a different side of the aisle as to what's going on. But we can both sit down and see what happens when both people know the facts and look at something. You have differing beliefs. I respect everything you've said, and I don't think that anyone in here, I'd still butthurt, that would, you know, you didn't say that you're going to vote for Trump, whatever it may be. I don't care. It's not my job to tell you who to vote for, just like I don't want someone telling me who to vote for. I just want people to be able to have a dialogue, see that it's okay to reach across the aisle and have a conversation, base that conversation off of facts that both people know, that both people agree with, that are actually facts, and speak intelligently, respectfully, and have a conversation. And that's what we were able to do. And hopefully, you know, I hope that you enjoyed it. It was beneficial for you, absolutely. You know, to see that we're not all assholes. Conservatives aren't fucking get you, you know, and it's more so of the, it's more so of the infestation of the media just injecting divide and animosity into citizens and since and just America as a whole. And no one takes the time to question it because no one can get their face away from the keyboard. If you look at my profile, you respond to me, you're respectful. Kate Bryant Hall, on the other hand, was not. And I sent her the same DM that I sent you. You responded respectfully. We had a conversation. We hopped on here. Kate, on the other hand, got her ass dragged because she's a child. So she wants to squawk and not talk and show her face. Well, I don't do live. I get more emotional on live. How are you going to get more emotional than your messages? And your bio says that you're emotionally disturbed. Literally, it says emotionally disturbed in her job description.
Oh.
So, like, I mean, you teed that one up for me like Barry Bonds in the height of the steroid era, my friend. But, you know, I appreciate you talking, open dialogue. Whenever you're back in D.C., my man, let me know. We'll grab a beer. I'm going to hop off here shortly, though. But is there any other last questions or things that you wanted to say or anything like that?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I do appreciate the engagement of dialogue. I largely want to communicate to anyone who's watching or anyone in the comments section that, you know, if we're going to move forward in a way that's productive for the United States and for the world, regardless of what your particular purview may be, it's extremely important for us to put aside the vitriol and realize that we have to work together. I would gladly work with any of the individuals, regardless of the rhetoric or what their opinion of me might be or my particular proclivities or involvements might be. I would gladly work with anyone on creating a definable, effective solution to the policy issues that that face us on a global and domestic scale. And I think that more people should really entertain what it would be like if we could all just simply work together as Americans to move the country forward.
Exactly. So, that's all that I have to say as well. We're on the exact same page. I couldn't have said it better myself. We're all Americans. We're on two sides of the aisle. My goal is to be the opposite of Moses and not part the Red Seas. I want to bring everyone together. We can have difference of opinion, but there's no excuse for not respecting other people unless they're ignorant or Hillary Clinton. And other than that, you know, we can make things work, and I'm glad to have you on, man. So thank you, and I hope you have a good evening. It's not nearly as late there out in Cali, but I need you to stay safe, but the coronavirus is a hoax, so I'm going to tell you to stay free since Gavin Newsom's controlling your ass.
Yes, and same to all of your to your viewers as well. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, man. Have a good one.
You too. Bye bye.
So there, see, it wasn't that bad. It was like talking to a normal person. Look at that. You can talk to someone on the other side of the aisle, but guess what he said? He said, "I'm not gonna vote for Joe Biden." Do you see what happens? It's only one person. It's only one person. But that's someone that just admitted he can't give a reason why Trump is a bad president, that he's done anything wrong. He said that he's not going to vote for Joe Biden. He doesn't know a single thing that Joe Biden could do other than whatever it is that Trump's doing, but worse. Agrees that Joe Biden probably doesn't even realize he's running for president, and he didn't like Trump's foreign policy. Now, see, that's okay. I don't have an issue with the way that Trump handles foreign policy. He didn't like the foreign policy, but he also had objective facts. He based on that. And guess what? Reasonable minds can differ. You can disagree on things. It's okay, contrary to popular belief. My thing is, I don't like the fact that people get dug into these opinions based on shit that Chris Cuomo says. I mean, the guy was on TV talking about the size of nose swabs a couple days ago, and he's a news anchor. So why is he a source of information? Laziness has overcome every American's desire for veracity, and that is the biggest plague facing America. It's not coronavirus. It's not the DNC. It's not the RNC. And it's not the GOP. It's not the White House or Congress. It's the fact that Americans themselves are too lazy, don't take a personal accountability, and they won't look up facts for themselves. And when you talk to someone that's informed, there was not a single part in that dialogue where either one of us got hostile with each other for over an hour. So why? Why can't more people do it? Why can't more people talk? Don't be like Kate on my Facebook page, because she got that ass dragged because she is a troll. Just like the guy that was making fun of gay people in here that I blocked earlier, then he made a new account and pleasantly reintroduced himself and was pleasantly shown the door again. So don't be a troll, be nice, open dialogue, and look what happens. A staunch California Harvard educated leader within the Federalist, the International Federalist Society for Women, just said he's not voting for Trump, or excuse me, not voting for Biden. Think about the impact that you can make if you're not a dick. Don't be mean. Talk to people, open that dialogue, make it a friendly invitation, because guess what? He's going to want to come back, and then we're going to have another episode on all the shit the DNC does. He's like, you'd be surprised what the DNC does for elections. I say, oh, yes, you'd be surprised what the DNC does for elections, because right now what they're doing is messing with voter ballots in Michigan. They tried to raise the ballot initiative and the votes needed for Bob Carr to get on the Senate seat, on the Senate ballot, because they know he's going to He will win if he gets on that ballot. If you don't know who Bob Carr is, look him up. Running against John James in the Republican primaries, he worked in the economic office of the White House. He's worked with the presidents. The man knows what he's doing. The man knows what he's talking about. And they are doing everything in their power to block him, because the Democrats know that they can beat John James. John James lost in 2018, despite being endorsed by Trump and Rubio. Michigan is a state that we need to pay attention to, people. Just like Nevada, just like Florida, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Texas. These states matter. But I'm going to hop off here. I appreciate you guys joining in. And I'll let you know next time I have them on. If you find any other liberals with the balls to come on, let me know. They're always welcome. Night, guys.